Time to get on the G&M Family Market phone line and welcome back to the show from the Boston Globe and the Bob Ryan Podcast. It's Bob Ryan himself. Hello, Bob.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Great to have you back on the program with us.
Thank you.
Let's talk about this. I had a tremendous piece you had in the Globe yesterday as you called the state of college sports a national disgrace.
Well, that was the headline. I wish they hadn't. Seriously. You know how headlines, people don't have to understand that we have nothing to do with the headline. The headline was a bit dire and apocalyptic, but I call it an embarrassment, and we can do better. But disgrace is a stronger word. Anyway, I don't like the way things are trending. Let's put it that way.
Well, and as you point out, it sort of began about the time we brought organized sports into college with the Harvard crew team getting it rolling.
Harvard and Yale were the first intercollegiate sporting event recorded in American history on August 3rd, 1852. A Harvard boat rowed against plural Yale boats up on Lake Winnipesaukee in New Hampshire. And within a couple of years, someone was cheating. One of the two, and I forgot which, but I can assure you it happened, hired a phony coxswain that was not a student at the university. And that began, established the tradition of cheating in college sports, which has manifested itself in many, many ways. And now it's reaching a peak with this money being thrown around by the sneaker companies and the assorted goings-on that we now are well aware of now in college, high-level college sport, primarily, obviously, football and basketball.
And you've brought this up with us before, but you also pointed out in the column yesterday, we're the only country that attempts to do this with our institutes of higher education.
Yes, Japan, I had it pointed out to me. College baseball is rather a big deal. High school baseball is huge. One of the most important sporting events in Japan is the annual high school baseball tournament. But college sports are huge as well, baseball only, and they do have on television, and there's a national interest. But I don't think it remotely begins to have the potential for corruption that our basketball and football have. And so we are the only one that does this. Europe doesn't do it. South America doesn't do it. Elsewhere in Asia, they don't do it. As far as I know, Antarctica doesn't do it. And Africa doesn't do it. And Australia doesn't do it. It's us. And we have this system that we have allowed to evolve, which we love. And I say we, I mean millions and millions of Americans love the system. And I grew up with it. I grew up, my father was an assistant athletic director at Villanova when I was 6 years old. I was immersed in college basketball and football at the early age, going to games. I don't remember ever not going to games. And I fell in love with it, and I followed it, and I've been an avid fan of college sports ever since. But along the way, I've watched this evolution of it, and it's not good. It's not. It's ugly, and it's antithetical to any purpose of higher education. I recognize that, and yet I am an enabler, as are many others, probably you too.
Oh, yeah.
That we're addicted to the competition, and once they throw the ball up or kick it off, we no longer care how those players got there. Only that they are there and that we enjoy watching them play.
Now, I've seen some people suggest that we could solve some of this problem if we just diverted some of that big cash to the players. That seems like an oversimplification to me.
That has nothing to do with this issue. I reject that. I mean, that's a separate issue. And we all know what a hot-button issue that is. But I don't think paying the athletes is the issue here, that would take care of everything. No, paying the athletes... after they get to school, after they've already been bought, what's that? Is that cleansing anything? No. So that's not the idea. That's a topic for discussion and a serious one and a worthy one and one that I think has got to be addressed sooner or later. And I have thoughts on that. I'm sure you do too. But no, I don't think that is the issue here in this thing. That this news that broke last week is separate from the issue of paying college athletes. That's my position. I clearly understand others disagree.
And while college is the focus here, but this all begins at much younger levels, and certainly, as you pointed out, when you bring in the whole AAU culture, that's a big factor in this as well.
Yeah, well, you know, once upon a time, the high school adolescent basketball was all about one thing, high school. And there were corrupt high school coaches. I remember well the charges leveled against the head coach at Camden, New Jersey High School, Clarence Turner, who was alleged to have, was pimping his kids to Louisville, and most notably Billy Thompson and Milt Wagner, and he that was pretty evident. So, I mean, these things were going on to a degree. But when the AAU got involved and people who weren't even remotely educators got involved and self-serving people with agendas that included and then they got involved. And then, of course, the sneaker companies getting involved at the highest level, running summer leagues, controlling kids from the age of 13 and 14 and bringing them in and snaring them in their web, if you will, and getting them into a system that these kids understand that was utterly unknown to previous generations. It's all different now. It is not the way it was in the 50s, 60s, 70s, or even in the 80s. But it's firmly entrenched. That's the way you do it. And the high schools have been cut out. These kids don't even think about it, worry about it. It used to be the biggest glory you could get, win the high school state championship. Mm. Well, and some of these, the high-level kids don't even worry about that anymore, because how many of them, Rich, and you know, have gone to multiple high schools / prep schools?
Right.
Aha, I say prep schools laughingly. and that's the way, that's the system. So, you know, it's a totally different system.
We're talking with Bob Ryan here on Downtown. Let's shift gears and talk Red Sox as they get set to begin the playoffs on Thursday. It's hard to get a read on this team. They've been so mercurial this year. Are they built for any kind of a postseason run?
My read is as follows. I am regarding this as they are totally and utterly and completely 100% playing with house money. The Indians are better, the Astros are better, and probably the Yankees are better. Certainly the Yankees have a better lineup, that's for sure. And that bullpen is outstanding. So anything they do is a bonus this year for me. The lineup, I mean, it speaks for itself. It's not a strong lineup, and that I don't know how they won. Really and truly, what they did was remarkable to win 93 or 4 games with the team that they put out there night after night, and it's remarkable. And more power to the bullpen and to the start that Sale gave them, although he's tailed off somewhat. The other teams are better, and so I think this is a pressure-free environment. And I hope fans agree with me that don't put any pressure on them. Expect nothing and be happy for whatever you get. That's what I think.
I'm sure, like me, you spent some time yesterday flashing back to 50 Sundays ago and mm-hmm. one of the great days in New England sports history.
I was there with my then-girlfriend, current wife of 48 years, and we were there behind home plate. And my quick story is that I had a summer job in Boston, and on a Friday in late July, I got paid, and I went down to the ballpark on my lunch hour, and I bought tickets for 6 upcoming games. And while I was gazing up at the board with the available games, I said, "Oh, look at that! The Twins are here on October 1. Wouldn't that would be pretty nice?" So I bought tickets for that game, box seats, $3, and we were behind the screen for that game. And it was the whole saga unfolded. The remainder of that summer and August and September were magical. And then finally that last weekend, the Saturday game coming from behind, and Cott gets hurt, and Boomer breaks the tie with a home run off Ron Klein to start the 7th inning. Nobody mentions that one. I got to mention that home run. Mm. And then, yes, it's the 3-run homer off Jim Merritt, who was brought in specifically to face some left-hander in the 8th inning, and they win that game. And then, of course, Sunday, all the events that have been well-documented, and Lomborg's bunt and all that. So, yes, it was. And then the post-game, and have you seen the photos? And have people, they've been posted of the fans storming the press box, climbing up the screen?
Yes.
And there's a broadcaster waving his arms, looking horrified. Get down, get down. Sandy Koufax. And,
wow.
It was a eerie scene. Then I remember riding the T back to my girlfriend's house, and everybody's got a transistor radio on, listening to the Tigers and the Angels, and we get back to the house and listen to the end of that game, and the Red Sox have to sit around for 3 hours to await the outcome of the second game of that doubleheader to find out whether or not they were actually going to win or whether there would have to be a playoff game on Monday. And Dick McAuliffe comes up and with the men on in the 9th inning, and he had not hit a single double play all year. So what's he do? Because baseball was the greatest conversational sport ever conceived by mortal man. He goes 4-6-3. The first double play of the year, ends the season, and makes the Red Sox the pennant winners. Yeah, I remember it.
Just a little bit, yeah. I know you love history. Did you watch any of the Ken Burns Vietnam War series?
We are DVRing it. I'm through episode 4, and as a matter of fact, I'm planning this tonight. Would be a good time to pick up another one. And because now from this rest of this week is going to be devoted to baseball, obviously, and for me, obviously. And so tonight's the last opportunity until, you know, for quite a while down the road. But thank God for DVR. It's captivating. It's fantastic, as all the Ken Burns productions are.
Yeah, watch for our next guest on the show, who features prominently in it.
Okay.
A Marine from Missouri by the name of John Musgrave, whose story is incredible.
He's a star. As a matter of fact, I was listening to a local NPR broadcast today in which they played the excerpt of him talking about going to the Vietnam Memorial. And it's hard not to miss up. I'm aware of who he is, and he has been a tremendous contributor to that, absolutely.
Yeah, you better believe it. Who's on the podcast this week?
Well, we're taking a week off and getting ready for a third season, which starts next week. And I haven't booked that one yet, but down the road I've got first commitment from Upton Bell, who's got a new book out about his life. And, of course, people should know that he was the 33-year-old general manager of the Patriots, and he was the son of Burt Bell, who was the commissioner of the NFL.
Right.
And also, his mother was a Broadway star. He grew up in a way that you didn't and I didn't. No one listening to you did. It's a phenomenal, interesting, fascinating life from a fascinating guy, and I've known him. We've been friends for 35, 40 years, so he's going to be a guest coming up, and I've got some other good ones, I hope, lined up. Things go on. I'm also part of a Sports Reporters podcast that debuted a couple of weeks ago, and I'm permanently a member with Mitch Albom and Mike Lupica that twice a week. Suddenly I'm podcasting myself, you know, all the time.
Now, and so I have to ask before we let you go, because I know you were watching like I was last night, when do you have the time to do any lamping?
Well, I cleared decks last night. I hadn't seen Ray Donovan, and I missed a whole year last year, and that shook me up, but I got ready for Larry Donald. I thought it was great. I thought that, I tweeted immediately this morning, he's still throwing 98 on the black. I just think it was so ingenious, not only the topics that he chose, but the way he wove the whole thing together. It was great. And if you're a Larry David fan, I don't think you're going to be disappointed. I think you'll enjoy anybody that didn't see it. But I'm so glad he's back.
Yeah, it was worth the wait, definitely. Bob, always great talking with you. Thanks for being with us this afternoon.
Rich. Take care.
That's Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe, Bob Ryan Podcast as well.